We'll take a moment to bring our minds to rest, into awareness of our body, out of our swirling thoughts and into awareness of our body sitting quietly on our seat in our quiet space in the present moment of awareness. And in this state of rest, we will chant the prayers. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, mirrored for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms. According to the different propensities of beings, please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. And I'll do my teaching prayers, the four dharmas of Gompopa, and a verse from the Aspiration to Excellent Conduct. Dadan Sanchantam Shilo Chusudroras and Jilap to Soul, Chilam to Drawers and Jilap to Soul, Umtrupa Sowers and Jilap to Soul, Trupa Yashisu Chowers and Jilap to Soul. I pray for blessing may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing may confusion arise as wisdom. Vaya ke dang lidan ijin ke chobam daran yi ke nam dang dola kanji dati dhutsamba nam she ke dhida ki chotento. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons, and of humans too, in the many languages that are, may I teach the Dharma in them. And a reminder for arousing bodhicitta, what we are doing this teaching in order to accomplish. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation.
Sorry, children, could you put your headsets
in? Oh, thank you.
The quality is so different.
I forgot today. Yes.
Sorry. It's so
different. No, I appreciate that. Anybody can remind me. A lot, unfortunately, we have Lama Jinzan, who's very aware of these issues as an audio person.
Easier said than done. Oh, okay. Can you hear me? Oops. Okay. Everybody can hear me okay? No. Okay. I'm dealing with it. Is it any better now? Can you hear me? Marilyn says that they can't hear. Joanne is straining. I'm going to take it out and put it in. Okay, can you hear me now? Is it good there at KDC? Okay, it might, sometimes it takes a minute or two. Okay, it's better now? Okay, good, good. Yes, thanks. I try to remember to do that before we get on because there's always that little adjustment. All right, good. So here we are. Someone has just joined us. I'm unmuting the person who just joined us by phone so that you can tell us who you are.
Oh, it's Kathy, Virginia.
Oh, hey, Kathy. Kathy Senecal. Good to have you with us. All right, I'm going to remute you now. And so everybody's muted, as always. Same ground rules as always. Get my attention or unmute yourself if you want to say something. I got a couple. We're not going to cover a lot of ground today because, again, we have a limited time frame, which has its advantages as well as its disadvantages. It's a very sort of bite-sized, you know, dose of Dharma. And this is really challenging Dharma in certain ways. But I just wanted to say, since it's just a one-hour class, we don't do group meditation here for those of you joining us from Gompopa class. Questions and comments are welcome as always, but we do need to finish by one. So wherever we are at 12:55-ish, we will stop and do our dedication and pick up the next time. So for today, we're going to start with a quick review of chapter one of Trungpa Rinpoche's book, which we went over last time on cause and effect, which is the introduction to why we need to study the 12 links. Then we'll do a quick overview of the diagram. Hopefully everybody has their diagram. If not, you can follow along and look it up later. and then we'll go on to chapter two of Trungpa Rinpoche's book. And I don't expect we're going to cover a lot. We won't get through the whole 12 links today. And so Marilyn and I were talking just this morning by text about, you know, we don't have to limit it to three sessions. And so I'm not going to worry too much about that. It won't take more than an extra session or two, but I think it's going to take today and next week just to get through all of the 12 links. And then we'll go on to how, like, the practical application of that. So let's see. Right. Okay, so I also want to reiterate from last week for those who are just joining us that I would not say that I'm teaching the 12 links. But what I would say is that we're exploring this topic together. To really understand them, each of us needs to engage with them again and again through study, meditation, and contemplation. That said, we have the classes. If you feel that you don't have time to study between the classes, no worries. There's definitely some benefit in just hearing about them from time to time. But if you have a little time, even a little time before the next class, it doesn't have to take a lot of time. You can just do the reading, which is very short, and go over the diagram a few times. Just look at that diagram, look at all the links, get familiar with the order of them, see if you understand them, and just give yourself time. You don't have to memorize anything. We're just familiarizing ourselves slowly with the basic way that our experience unfolds within the framework of samsara. That's what the 12 links do for us. So if you don't have time to study, no problem. You're welcome to come. If you do have even a little time, it'll really benefit you just to do the reading and take a look at the diagram once or twice. So I also wanted to say that it is very important as you study any topic, and especially a more academic topic like this, to keep asking yourself, what is the practical application of this teaching? Why did the Buddha teach this? How can understanding this help me in my life? There is no teaching in the Buddha Dharma that is purely academic. None. The purpose of every single teaching is to help us actually free ourselves from the quicksand of samsara that we're flailing in. So keep looking for the practical application in every teaching. And we will talk more about that. We'll spend a session or two on that after we finish our basic tour of the 12 links. So we're mainly relying on Trungpa Rinpoche's book, which I sent everybody as a PDF file, and I have on my Kindle. and with a little supplementation from Kala Rinpoche's Luminous Mind, which has a chapter on the 12 links, and also in particular Sita Rinpoche's book, Awakening the Sleeping Buddha, which explains it. I think it's in the chapter on reincarnation and karma. So just for a short summary of them, you can use one of those sources, or you can use the Wikipedia article that I sent, which is also very helpful. And if you can't find the link I sent, all you have to do is go to Google and put in 12 links Buddhism. If you put in just 12 links, you get a whole array of things, but 12 links Buddhism gets you the Wikipedia article right away.
So now I want to talk a little bit, like to just summarize and review what we went over last week, which was mainly Trungpa Rinpoche's first chapter on cause and effect, because that's the introduction to the whole topic. It's the why we study this, you know, this technical, rather technical subject. So he starts off by telling us that there are two branches of Buddha Dharma. He doesn't say those words, but that's what, you know, the basic idea. There's two different branches of Buddha Dharma, like of what we study, contemplate, and meditate. And the first one is understanding the way things truly exist, which is ultimate reality, which boils down basically to emptiness. That things don't exist the way that we sort of viscerally take them to exist, but their true existence is at a deeper level at which you really can't draw any conclusions about anything. You can just rest in it. It's non-conceptual. So that's the first one. And in chapter two, under ignorance, Trungpa Rinpoche is going to tell us a lot about how we can work on that. Because basically, it's dispelling ignorance. This is like the wisdom, you know, the wisdom path is understanding the way things really exist as opposed to the way they appear to us to exist. But the second branch is we also need to understand the way things appear to exist, which is relative reality. And in fact, you know, what does relative reality mean? Well, I particularly like Tony Duff's explanation of it in his Tibetan English Dictionary, The Illuminator, that's online. He just cuts through everything and calls it fictional reality, because that's actually what the Tibetan means, kunzop. It means like fake. There's no reality to it whatsoever. So it's sort of fake reality or fictional reality. But even though it's fictional and it's not the way things really exist, we have to understand it. Because when we mistake the way things appear as the way they really are, as solid reality, which is how we usually react to things, that's where our emotional reactions come from. When we take things that are not solid as solid, that is confusion. That is samsara. And that is suffering. That's where suffering comes from, is mistaking the nature of reality. So for those who were at Kala Rinpoche's recent teachings at KTC, he explained there that in order, one of the things he said that we need to do as practitioners is to understand the reality of suffering. And that's what the 12 links is all about. Like, how do we come to this pass? Lama Norla Rinpoche used to say the same thing, that in order to free ourselves from samsara, we first have to understand samsara. We need to know what it is. We need to know how it works. And that is, in fact, the first noble truth. And the Buddha's instruction for how to approach the first noble truth was that we need to understand it. So that's why we need to study the 12 links, is because we have to know it before we can start to cut through it. So the 12 links are a roadmap of how things appear to us, how they come to appear that way, how we come to take them as real. And that is through interdependence. How they appear, like how they come to look the way they look, is through interdependence. Everything that appears by depending on other things. Nothing exists in a vacuum or sort of, you know, in a solitary, freestanding way. So the 12 links show how interdependence works. If we don't understand it, that's samsara. If we do understand it, that's how we free ourselves from samsara. So the Buddha broke interdependence or relative reality down into 12 distinct steps or stages. But in terms of our moment-to-moment experience, they unfold so instantaneously that it seems like it's all happening now, like all at once. We just experience it as our experience, as the way things look to us. Really, it's a very fast process, but you can break it down into 12, as the Buddha did for purposes of teaching. The 12 links, though, in addition to how our moment-to-moment experience unfolds, The 12 links is also, like, that framework is also applied to how we move from one life to another, you know, through all the bardos of, you know, birth to death, and then death to the bardos that unfold between life and death, and then into the next lifetime. So that would be the macrocosmic or the slow motion view of the same process that we experience moment to moment as the same, you know, cycling around of the same 12 links. And that brings us to the sort of conundrum that Kala Rinpoche gave us in Luminous Mind that we touched on last week. In terms of how quickly these 12 links can unfold, Kala Rinpoche in Luminous Mind goes so far as to say that all 12 steps have to be present at the same moment for experience to occur. And he gives, you know, to understand what that means, he gives the example of the sound of a bell. You have to have the bell itself. The bell has to have a clapper. There has to be motion, and somebody has to be there to hear it. You have to have all of that at once for the sound of a bell to actually occur. So to me, this whole thing in terms of the 12 links is kind of a koan. How it can be a 12-step process, as it's described here by Trungpa Rinpoche, and even also by Kala Rinpoche, yet all the steps must be present concurrently, according to Kala Rinpoche. And I don't have the answer to that, but it's for us to contemplate. This is like a koan. It's for us to contemplate, and not too actively. Like, we don't have to try too hard, and we don't have to figure it out, but it's good to just keep it in mind. It's just one of those cognitive dissonance things that, you know, is instructive in some way, and you can't necessarily make it mesh, although maybe I'm sure Trungpa Rinpoche could explain it fully, or Kala Rinpoche. For myself, I see it as 12 distinct steps. Like, that makes sense to me, but also as the instantaneous content of our experience that's flowing moment to moment, which is the 12 steps happening again and again too fast to see. we run into, actually, I was thinking that we run into a similar quandary when we're discussing the nature of mind, which is that other branch of what we need to understand, the way things really are versus the way things appear to be. So the nature of mind is explained as having three distinct aspects, which is emptiness, clarity, and what we have always called unimpededness, or unceasingness, and which Kala Rinpoche seems to have called transparent, or transparency, in his recent teachings. So we have to understand all of those three aspects, but it's also explained that they're inseparable from each other, that you cannot, they don't exist apart or distinctly from each other. And so we have to break it down, and I think this is also true of the 12 links. We have to break it down in order to analyze it so that we can start to understand it and eventually start to see it directly, like how it works in terms of our experience. So coming to the end of the review of chapter one, Trungpa Rinpoche also makes the point in chapter one, another important point, and this is like the application, again, this speaks to the application of all of the Dharma. He says that examples like the bell or the steps and conditions that are needed for a flower to bloom are examples of outer independence, how the outer world works. But more important, he said, is to understand the inner interdependence of how our mind works, how our inner experience unfolds, how our emotional impulses get us into trouble, so we always end up in the same suffering and disintegration and repetition of the same habitual patterns, leading to more suffering again and again. So the temptation, like, even when we learn about emptiness, we tend to, like, look at things around us and go, oh, this table is empty. You know, it's not solid the way it appears. Or, you know, the trees outside or the mountains are really emptiness. They don't really exist the way we see them. But really what we need to be looking at more than that is looking inward and going, oh, this anger that I'm feeling right now, this doesn't exist as it appears. It's really empty. And that's the antidote to anger. So as with all things Buddhist, we really want to be looking inside and not looking outside. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't apply to the outside. As Trungpa Rinpoche pointed out, there is outer interdependence. you know, that also depends on causes and conditions unfolding in a certain way. But what we really want to do is focus, you know, have a sort of a laser focus on our own mind in all of this. This is an explanation of internal processes and how we create our world and how we create our suffering and our habitual patterns again and again and again. So now we're going to open up Trungpa Rinpoche's teaching and go to the end of it. And I can't tell you what page it's on, but it's the very last paragraph of chapter one. So which brings us back to this basic idea I mentioned, that this is not an academic exercise, but it's practical advice that we can really use. Like, how does understanding the 12 links help us free ourselves from samsara? So at the end of the chapter, he says, when we study this, we do so in the actual process of creation and action that generates samsara. So we're studying the actual process of creation and action that generates samsara. We also study the order in which we can take this process apart. Dismantling the process of samsara shows the way to liberation and enlightenment. This is the reason why the teachings on inner interdependence are very important. So I'm going to give you this challenge, and this is the challenge I give myself too. The challenge for the rest of the course, and you can start this right away as we're reading about ignorance, is there a way to intervene in this cycle of 12 links that describe how we are stuck in confusion in order to stop the process? Can we intervene at every link or at only some links? Like, how can we stop like the cycle of samsara? So I would just suggest that he gives some very strong hints in the chapter on ignorance. He gives really direct practical advice for how we can stop ignorance in its tracks. So be alert throughout our study of the 12 links, like as to where the practical advice is, where we can actually take some action or refrain from some action. So we're going to take a moment now to just look at the diagram. So if everybody has their diagram, and what I did with mine, as I said last week, the diagram I sent has the names of the 12 links, but it didn't have the numbers. I put the numbers in the little circles, and I also wrote in names from other teachers. I didn't relate to the names. The names here for each of the links are sometimes different from what Trungpa Rinpoche's translator and Kala Rinpoche's translator used. And of course, as I said last week, Trungpa Rinpoche and Kala Rinpoche are always using the same term. They have a specific name in Sanskrit and Tibetan, but it's translated different ways by different translators into English. So pick the one that you like the best, and you can write that in above each name of a link. So just to go over this again, and this is, you know, for those who have already done this and who feel very familiar with this chart, this is not wasted effort, because every time we look at the same material, we go deeper into it and we internalize it a bit more. So the overview of the diagram is that it's actually in the jaws of the Lord of Death. You know, this is the cycle of samsara, the cycle of birth and death. And in the center of it, like it's concentric circles, not all of which are represented in this diagram. The inner concentric circle is the three poisons, which generate the whole thing. The pig represents delusion, as it says here. The rooster or the bird represents craving or desire. And the snake represents aversion or anger or hatred. So those are the three poisons, and the little arrows, I mean, they keep feeding on each other and going round and around and around again. And that is the basic core of the cycle of samsara. And then not depicted here, there's the next concentric circle out just shows somebody going up on one side and somebody going down on the other side, just showing how our actions either take us up, you know, through karma, take us up to the higher realms or down to the lower realms, so how karma works. And then the next circle out before we get to the 12 links is the six realms. We're not going to go into those. I think everybody's familiar with the six realms of existence. And if you're not, there's so much material to read. You can just look that up. But those are just the different ways that are these three basic poisons, emotional poisons, can manifest as certain states of existence, you know, and you can think of them as either realms of existence as they're traditionally presented, or just psychological states that we cycle through again and again, the hell realms, the hungry ghost realm, the animal realm, the gods realms, the human realm, and so forth. So the very outer circle is the actual micro mechanism through which all of this manifests. And so the first link, and I'm just going to go through them now, and then we're going to read Trungpa Rinpoche. First link is ignorance. It's called blindness / unconsciousness here, but most texts call it ignorance. And it's depicted, so each, in the real Wheel of Life, which you can find through the Wikipedia link, it's a blind person walking. That's the pictorial, you know, pictorial depiction of the first link. The beginning of all is just basic ignorance, and Trungpa Rinpoche is going to explain to us what that means. So from basic ignorance, we get karmic activity. That's a pretty good name. The impulse to act is another way that it's stated. That's just the very beginning, before we've done anything. It's just that first impulse. And it's depicted by a potter shaping a clay vessel. Then that leads us to what's called here conceptual thinking. Kala Rinpoche calls it individual consciousness, where, you know, it, that impulse starts to form into something more solid. And that takes us to step 4, which is name and form, where...
Sorry. Yeah. I'm challenged by an internet thing. What did you pick for conceptual thinking? I just missed that.
Well, Kala Rinpoche called it, in Luminous Mind, individual consciousness.
Okay.
It's often called just consciousness. It's pretty iffy to me, these two links. Like, I'm still working out their exact meaning, and we'll get some help from
with okay, that. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah,
no problem. Anybody, anytime. If something's not clear. Okay, so then from this conceptuality arising, then it solidifies further into what's called name and form, here called words and images. Name and form, that has an interesting explanation that we will get to when we get there. So right now we're just building our consciousness. We're building, you know, we're building up from nothing, from ignorance, to like the full reality of the moment, or our karma. From words and images, we get the 6 senses. That has a lot of different names. It's called sense perception here. That's fine with me. Also, just the 6 senses, or the 6 sensory gates, which is a house with 6 windows. Name and form was 2 men in a boat, or 2 people in a boat, we could say. So the house with 6 windows. From sensory perception, then we get contact, which it says here is lovers kissing. Contact, that's when like this internal awareness, this consciousness that's developed, makes contact with outer appearances, like something, like you see the ice cream. Like the impulse to eat ice cream, the propensity to eat ice cream has built up, and it has a form, and there's ice cream in the freezer, and there's you, and there's a spoon. And so now there's contact with the ice cream, to use a really crude, sort of rough example. And then, so from contact, from just, you know, contact with this outer thing that we see, ignorance makes us see this outer thing as separate from us. And so we either have aversion to it, or we have craving for it. So contact, and then that leads to, here it's called judgment fixation, more commonly called sensation number 7, which is an arrow piercing the eye. That's the feeling of pleasantness or unpleasantness that we get from this contact. We see the ice cream and we either love it or hate it. If it's mint chocolate, hate. So then from there we go to number 8, which is, I don't know why it's called satisfied thirst here. I would cross out the satisfied. It's usually craving or thirst or attachment. Sita Rinpoche calls it attachment, where you've seen the thing, you've got a basic feeling of pleasant or unpleasant, I want it or I don't want it, and then you really, it just develops into a strong craving or aversion. So there's this chart holds true for positive things and negative things. It's not just craving or grasping in the positive sense, but it could be the negative sense that would get that thing away from me. So from 8, craving, we go to 9, which is grasping. I particularly like Sita Rinpoche's word for this, which is pursuit. We go after it. We want the thing, and now we're taking the action to make it happen, whether it's the, you know, get it away from me or I want it. And then number 10 is called becoming. Here it's called conception / becoming. That's fine, but just becoming. And it says, it's depicted by sexual intercourse. I think that actually in most charts is number 6, where it says lovers kissing. Really, it's a pregnant woman here in most depictions. Then that becoming, like you're in, like, you know, the thing has, like, it's fully formed now. Like, there's no going back now. Once you have conception, there's no going back. So it's not where you can intervene. Just a hint. Then that leads to birth itself, number 11, which shows a woman giving birth. And then the final step is the deterioration of the whole thing. Like, if it's the ice cream, it's like the aftermath of the ice cream. The ice cream is gone. You gained 2 pounds. You feel terrible. Or if you're talking about like the whole life death cycle, it's like you're dead. This is where you die and you go back into ignorance. So we're going to talk somewhat through the course of this whole thing about both the microcosmic, like just internal experience application of the 12 links, and also the Bardo's application. We won't talk about that as much, but it is definitely one of the major applications of the 12 links. So that's the basic cycle. Does anybody have any questions or comments before we go into, yes, Patrick, before we start the chapter? Patrick, you might have to get close to the computer. You guys are pretty far away.
Okay, can you hear this?
Yes, yes.
I just want to confirm about when the karma that's mentioned in the second link is karma from the past.
Yes, yes.
And the karma on becoming, it says, third sentence is, it's necessary for one to perform an actual action for karma to ripen at a later time. So we haven't gained any karmic results from the first 9 places. Is that what it's saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to go into that more later, so I don't want to dwell on it today, as we're going to go step by step. But these things can be grouped, and yes, some of it is like the ripening of karma from our previous life, and some of it is the creation of karma towards our next life.
And you can just think about something, you know, and that doesn't cause you any negative karma.
Oh, no, that's not true, actually, because when they talk about, I mean, that makes sense in terms of the way it's worded.
Yeah.
But what are the 3 categories of the 10 negative actions? 3 of body, 4 of speech, and 3 of mind. So thoughts, like the 3 of mind are covetousness. So that's considered a negative action in this whole scheme of things. So mental action is not, it's not as serious as physical action. Thinking about killing somebody is negative. You know, especially when you think about you're creating the propensity to do it again. The more you think about it, the more likely you are to do it, and the more likely you are to have negative thoughts. But until you actually do it, it's not a full karma. You know, that's dissected in detail in the Abhidharma, and that's beyond the scope of what we're going to do. But thoughts count, but not as much as actions, like physical actions. When they say,
you can't catch the fish, you still have some negative karma from you could get it, kill it.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
So if you don't catch the fish, yeah,
right,
you'll have the negative karma. That's
right. Well, there's like 4. I'm not sure I'm going to get them all, but we learned long ago that there's 4 components to a karmic action, yeah. And one is that you have to want to do the thing, like you have to want to catch the fish. The second is you have to succeed. You have to actually succeed in doing it. The last one is you have to rejoice. So I think there's something in between 1 and 2. You have to want to do it. So I'm only getting three of them. Yes, go for it.
Okay, so you have to have the inclination, the desire, the motivation. Right. Then you have to plan it. You have to actually make the actual plan to do it. Then the third is you actually do it. And then the fourth is you fully rejoice. And if you have all four of those complete, then it's a full. And if you have any one of those less than, that lessens the ripening of strength.
But even just the inclination is a little bit of karma. Yeah. Thank you, Jinzong. Thank you for being here and filling that in. Okay. So it's a good question, Patrick. Was that a sufficient answer for now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Anybody else before we go on to chapter two? All right. So I'm now looking at, on my Kindle, at Trungpa Rinpoche's chapter two, the 12 links, number one, ignorance. And it's very long. We're not going to read the whole thing. I think we may get through ignorance today. We may not get to anything else, but ignorance we can work on. This is one of the things we can intervene in, absolutely. And he's going to tell us how to do that. So it's plenty to work with. If you could just work on ignorance, then you could probably forget all the other 12 links, but they will be helpful to you. So we don't really want to forget about them. Ignorance is really important though. So I'm just going to read. In the presentation of the 12 links of interdependence, the first link, sorry, I have to, okay, now Kathy said that she was having, she's still with us though. Kathy was having some trouble getting on, I think. Okay, in the presentation of the 12 links of interdependence, the first link, which is the basis for all the others, this is why ignorance is so important. It's the basis for all the others is ignorance. Being ignorant creates all the ups and downs, all the happiness and suffering that are part and parcel of samsaric experience. Samsara is like that. Sometimes we are happy and sometimes we suffer. All of the complex illusions and manifestations that make up this samsaric world are rooted in ignorance. All of the complex illusions and manifestations that make up this samsaric world are rooted in ignorance. Ignorance is the root of everything that happens to us. Here, ignorance means not knowing the true nature of existence. When one does not understand or recognize the true nature of reality, then through this ignoring, all the manifestations of samsara come about. Ignorance is therefore the prime cause of our unhappiness, of our happiness and our suffering. That is why it is presented as the first of the 12 links. The first root link of ignorance means that by ignoring the true nature of phenomena, we project things that do not exist. We are deluded, we are confused. Just looking something up in my notes here. Okay. Although there is no self, we are under the illusion that a self exists. So here he's explaining to us what this ignorance, what this lack of awareness, what it consists of. Even though there is no self, we are under the illusion that a self exists. Although everything is impermanent, we incorrectly project permanence onto everything. And we may think that we don't, but if we didn't, then we would not suffer when things change, because we would absolutely know it was going to happen. And we would not have attachment to things remaining the way they are or the way we want them to be. We also believe that some things, such as material possessions, will bring happiness. I probably did that yesterday, maybe this morning. You know, breakfast. I don't know, you know. when in fact they do not. Really, we fall into that all the time, thinking that this thing is going to bring us happiness. And it's not really going to. It might bring us momentary pleasure, but we all know where that leads, through the suffering of change. Our ignorance gives rise to confusion, and because of confusion, our samsaric world is generated. All the ways we have of relating to things are generated from the root causes of ignorance. So for those of you in the Gampopa class, which is most of us here who are able to participate, this is a restating of Gampopa's introduction. Everything is emptiness. What gets us, the root of samsara is confusion, which is projected onto emptiness. Everything else comes from that. And if we don't have that projection, if we don't have that ignorance and we don't project it onto emptiness, what we have is emptiness, which is the way things really are, and we have no suffering. So So Trungpa Rinpoche says, in a way, this is good news because it means that samsara and its suffering are easy to get rid of. At least they're sort of straightforward to get rid of. I mean, I think the effort is not easy, but it's pretty straightforward. Like if this is the cause of suffering, then getting rid of this gets rid of suffering. If samsara and suffering were real and solid and not just due to the confusion of our own mind, then they would be very hard, almost impossible to get rid of. As it is, because the root cause of suffering and samsara is the confusion and ignorance of our mind, if we just remove that delusion and ignorance, then the very root of samsara and suffering can be eliminated. By working on our mind's confusion, we can become liberated. Clearly, this is very fortunate. We have the possibility of liberation and enlightenment by attacking the very root of samsara and its complex suffering. There is a famous example, and we've all heard this, but it really is very lovely when you think about it. There is a famous example in the Buddhist scriptures illustrating how ignorance is the root of our suffering and showing that if we eliminate this mistaken view, the misery of samsara will go away. It is the example of mistaking a rope for a snake. Now, these teachings come from a place where snakes are a way of life. If you have the good fortune to live in Maine or New Hampshire, you know, you don't encounter a lot of snakes, and not of the poisonous variety. But in India, for example, like, you could die from a snake bite any time. So, so in India, if one goes into a dark room and sees a coiled rope, one might believe out of ignorance that the rope is a snake. Thinking that the rope is a snake, one would be full of fear and other painful and obscuring emotions. I mean, imagine if you thought a cobra, like you walk into a room and you think you're being confronted by a cobra, and all it has to do is reach out a little bit and you're dead. If there really were a snake, then one would be in serious trouble and would have to work hard to get out of the situation. But in this case, there is only confusion. There is no snake, only a rope, and you can't see it because the room is dark. So you turn on the light. By examining what is really there, one realizes that it is not a snake at all, and one's feelings of panic and anxiety are eliminated. Similarly, if samsara, which is quite frightening with all its pain and suffering, were as real as it seems, then to be free of it would be quite a job. But because samsara's very root is our own ignorance and confusion, then once we get rid of these, of this ignorance and confusion, all of the problems of samsara will disappear. And I'm hearing Lama Norla Rinpoche right now saying, no problem, no problem, no problem. Like everything that came to him, no problem. Why? Because he didn't have that root of ignorance. He saw that it was a rope. We thought it was a snake. We always thought it was a snake. And it was always a rope. And he saw it. So that's why he or any teacher, you know, who has realized this can be our guide, because they see the rope and we see the snake. So Trungpa Rinpoche continues, it is not that samsara is real and we have to get rid of it, but that our perception of samsara is rooted in a basic mistake, and it is the mistake that needs to be eliminated. Once that is done, we will be liberated from all of samsara. So imagine if samsara was a real solid thing, all the work that would have to go into dismantling that real solid thing. And all we have to do is see what it really is. We just have to turn on the light and see that it's a rope and not a snake. And again, easier said than done, just like me getting my headphones in. In order to counteract, let's see. Right, so this is where I'm going to stop reading and skip, but I'm going to read a little bit here. In order to counteract the confusion and ignorance that are the root of suffering, and here's the intervention, the Buddha taught at three levels, which are called the three vehicles. So then he goes through an explanation of the three vehicles, and we're not going to read that. We're just going to read some highlights from that section. In the Hinayana, or the foundational vehicle of Buddhism, the Buddha explained that our suffering and samsara, and this is the vehicle of Buddhism, the basic foundational vehicle that is based on the first turning of the wheel, the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha explained that our suffering and samsara is due to our mistaken belief that we have a solid, real self. He showed that in reality there is no lasting self, and that it is through our fabrication of the notion of self that all our suffering and difficulties come about. Through discovering that there is no lasting self, one realizes that there is no one who suffers, no one who has difficulties. This is indeed liberation. So now I'm going to the Mahayana, which is a paragraph or two ahead. The Buddha taught a combination of skillful means and wisdom in the second vehicle, the Mahayana. In order to remove ignorance, the Buddha demonstrated that not only is the individual self empty or devoid of a lasting self, right, but all outer phenomena, such as mountains and trees, as well as inner thoughts and feelings, are also empty. So in the second turning of the wheel, he went more into the nature of emptiness, the true underlying nature of both the self and phenomena. So I'm going to skip pretty far ahead to the end of the Vajrayana section, where he says the Vajrayana approach. So the Hinayana approach is to understand that there's no lasting self, and a few other things too. The Mahayana approach is to understand that all things are empty, self and phenomena. The Vajrayana approach is to examine the mind. It's just to look directly at the mind, which is very close by and far easier to analyze than all phenomena. And then he goes into a sort of a detailed explanation of emptiness, and we're not going to read that. We're going to skip ahead to, and I'm not sure how, you know, where this is going to be in your printout, where he talks about Mahamudra. He says, among the Vajrayana teachings are the Mahamudra teachings. I'll give everybody a moment to find that for those who are following along. Among the Vajrayana teachings are the Mahamudra teachings. The point of the Mahamudra teachings, so remember, Vajrayana is about looking at the mind. The point of the Mahamudra teachings is to gain a true vision of the nature of reality. In Mahamudra practice, we learn to develop first shamatha, shine, calm abiding, and then vipassana, laktong, insight meditation, looking at the nature of the mind. Through vipassana, we eventually come to realize the true nature of reality, and by doing so, we are attacking the very root of the 12 links, which is ignorance. So bingo, there's our intervention, starting with calm abiding meditation, progressing to insight meditation, or analysis of the nature of mind. And then through that, that's what dispels our ignorance. If you can dispel ignorance, you don't have to worry about the rest of the 12 links. Although there are other points of intervention for those of us who have not yet eliminated ignorance. So now I'm skipping ahead again to the paragraph that starts basic ignorance or ignoring the true nature. I'm going to the second sentence. Basic ignorance is expressed in Mahamudra as not recognizing the essence of mind. For example, the desire for things that seem powerfully attractive, instead of recognizing the truth that such things are empty of inherent nature, one thinks that the things one desires are really very important and worth getting. So this is a place where we can look at our own experience, our day-to-day experience, and catch ourselves doing that again and again, like thinking something is real and it's really going to bring us happiness. Instead of, as we learn through the, you know, shamatha, vipassana, mahamudra sequence, we learn to look at it and see the nature of it as it really is, which is emptiness, which is not something that can bring us either lasting happiness or lasting harm. We just see the emptiness of it. So this is our intervention. He says, the same is true of anger. What seems unpleasant is rejected with aversion, not recognizing the empty nature of appearances. Sometimes there is neither the power of attraction nor rejection, but just a mental dullness. So these are the three ways. You may remember this from the five skandhas. Second skandha, feeling or sensation, is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Again, not recognizing the true nature is accompanied by delusion. So that's even if it's indifference, you're still projecting confusion onto it. These are the three main mind poisons: desire, aversion, and mental dullness, all accompanied by ignorance. Okay, we're right at the end, huh? It doesn't show that on my Kindle. Okay, because ignorance accompanies thoughts and feelings. Wait a minute, did I want to read that? One acts and does things. Okay, because ignorance accompanies thoughts and feelings. Like every thought we have, every feeling, that emotion that we have, is based on ignorance. Because of this, One acts and does things, creating the next link in the chain of interdependence, which is karmic creation, or the impulse to act. And again, as Patrick pointed out to us, we're talking about our karma from past lives being reactivating, our karmic propensity, our habitual patterns from previous lifetimes coming back into play. And so when you're looking at the Bardo cycle, so ignorance is after you die. Like after you die, there's two things that can happen. Like when you actually, your mind actually, you know, leaves this life, it's still in the body technically, but that's a whole technical topic. But anyway, when you actually die, like, and the doctor says, okay, I'm calling it now, it's 12:55 p.m. either, if you have practiced enough in this lifetime, you go into awareness. You just go to Dharmakaya, and you're done. Like, the cycle is over, no more 12 links. That's what we want to do, and that's the intervention here in ignorance, the first link. If you didn't do that, and most of us may not have managed to reach that level, hopefully we all will, you go into unconsciousness for several days, is the teaching. So, and then, so from that state of complete blankness and unconsciousness from the shock of dying, when you had not cultivated awareness to like get you through it and stay aware, after a few days, your mind wakes up again. You're in the Bardo, you're in the next Bardo, your mind wakes up again, and all of your karma comes back into play because you still have those habitual patterns. So that's the first link, and that's as far as we got today. All of the others are much shorter, so we may very well cover all the other links next time. And then after that, after we've covered all the links and discussed them, then we will start looking more at what the application is, like where can we intervene in this, like sort of, and the bigger units of meaning around it. As Patrick was suggesting, some of the links can be grouped together very constructively to help us see how it all works and how we could get out of it. So for next time, I'm going to take questions if there are any, but for next time, keep studying chapter 2. If you didn't read the whole thing yet, finish reading. It's very short. And if you want to read ahead, we're going to probably skip the third chapter, but we'll do chapters 4 and 5, which are more about the practical application. And look at your diagram, like maybe every day. You can just have the diagram somewhere. Every day you could just take a minute and look like the inner circle and the outer circle and the 12 links and remind yourself of what the links are. And it will all, as you study, become clearer and clearer. And we won't leave this class with like a complete understanding, because I don't have a complete understanding, but we will understand it a lot better. So anybody got any questions or comments? My clock says we got 3 minutes. So yes, Marilyn, I'm going to unmute you.
I'm confused now, because I thought that the ignorance, you create the ignorance in, I'm creating the ignorance in my current life, hopefully not, but anyhow. And then that's putting, it's creating the karmic activity in my all-based consciousness, which is then what goes on into being reborn in the Bardo. So I thought steps 1 and 2, given what Trungpa Rinpoche said, were this life, if you're thinking about it in the macro version.
Yeah, you can see it all as this life, but at level 2, we're still talking about past karma. And then the other links are about creating, like starting from about 6, I think. And I, you know, this is just me, and it's explained by everybody, so you can look and we'll talk about it. Starting from about 6 is where you start creating. Like you use those karmic patterns that came back into play at link 2, you're going to start, they're going to ripen into you recreating, you know, or creating more karma that plays out then in the last set of links. And then the cycle starts all over again. And whatever karma you create anew in the last links will, you know, then you go unconscious, you go back into ignorance. And then that's the karma that comes, that reawakens in link 2 of your next life or your next experience.
Thank you.
Such as it is, Lama Jinsong, you got anything? Okay. Anybody else have a question or a comment or an elucidation? I mean, there could, you could see things more clearly than me. I miss things sometimes. And I'm glad to have Lama Jinsan here because she's had the same training and same teachings as me. And we remember different things. And sometimes she can clear up something that I have kind of fuzzy. So, I mean, it could be any one of you who would have an insight. Yes, Lama Jinsan.
I think it would help us also to think of, like, one good example is the period of time, like it's often taught, like to look at the example of when you're about to go to sleep, you go to sleep, yeah. and then a dream arises. Yeah. And in the reverse, when the dream dissolves, and then you reawaken into the so-called waking state. And so it's really talking about that. Like, that's one, not really, it is one example. Those are examples. So you can imagine the state of before, you know, actually falling asleep or just before you wake up of that being unconscious. And then it's really the just initial moving of the mind again, such that you even begin to, and that the thoughts that arise, even just the mood before you have actual thoughts, just the mood you happen to arise in has to do with some underlying something or other that may have absolutely nothing to do with, you know, you're still in your bed. There's nothing that's happened to you in that moment. But already, you know, you wake up sort of whatever the mood is, and that's due to underlying, you know, stuff. And that's the first moving, you know, that from that, then you can think of thoughts start to begin to develop, and then they get clearer, and then you actually make a decision, and then you actually do, you know, go towards something. But I just remember that that's a good way to think about it, is to look at how your mind is working at the time that you're falling asleep, to unconscious, to thoughts arising in the dreams, and vice versa, going, you know, beginning the stage of waking up. That's one way to think about things.
Thank you so much. I think that's a fabulous example that's very easy to understand. Okay, anybody else before we do our prayers? All right, then we'll do our prayers, and then I'll unmute everybody and we can say goodbye. So we're going to do the dedication of merit, the full Patrick, did you have something, or are you just in prayer? Just ready for those prayers. Okay, so we did a lot of study and mental exercise. Let's just let go of all of that. Take a deep breath, come back into a sense of our body and grounded with our feet on the floor and so forth. Letting everything settle. And now turning our attention to dedicating any benefit from this study and contemplation to the enlightenment of ourselves and all sentient beings. This merit, may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And letting our minds come to rest for a moment. And hopefully taking this restful state with us back into our all of our activity of the day. And Lama Jinsan, for those who came later, told us that they're having merit day at KTC today. A lot of activity there for the benefit of all beings. So anybody got anything? Probably not. Probably just goodbye at this point.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Well, just remember. Just remember.
Thank you.